Welcome to the Meta Cafe FutureLink podcast, where we explore the emerging technology. This is Chidam Aslabak. Today, we are joined by our special guest, Josh Lee, the project lead at Shard Lab, the innovation arm of Hashed, a top global Web3 venture capital firm. Josh has an illustrious career that spans Asia and United States, focusing on pioneering projects in the blockchain and Web3 spaces. Welcome, Josh. Where are you right now?
I am based in Seoul, South Korea right now.
Yeah, it's far away from United States, Florida.
Yeah, I know. It's almost like the time zone wise, it's upside down, right?
Yeah, exactly. Here is right now 8 p.m. and you are living in like 9 a.m., right?
Yep, that's correct.
Oh my God. Okay, good morning.
Yes, good evening to you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Josh, you are here to share your insights on the transformative power of blockchain technology. Also, the rising tide of cryptocurrency adoption in Southeast Asia, right? And future gaming in the digital age. Let's start with innovation in Southeast Asia. I'm curious about it. With your experience in like tech sector across Asia and the US, maybe you can start just a little bit talk about yourself with your words.
Yeah, thanks, Sikdam, for hosting this podcast in the first place. And for myself, I'm currently a project lead at Shard Lab. As you mentioned, it's the innovation arm of Hashed. It's also in partnership with SCBX Group, which is the largest financial group coming out of Thailand. So what we are essentially doing is venture building in lots of areas that could have potential use cases of blockchain technology outside of trading, right? So what you could think of is normally what people call it as, you know, would call as Web 2.5, like on which you abstract away the blockchain slash crypto elements. And then, you know, users can just benefit by using the product itself. And before joining Shard Lab, so a bit of my background, like I was born and raised in Seoul, South Korea. I've spent about almost like 20 years of my life here. But I've always wanted to see the bigger world. So I went to the United States to study abroad for my college. So I attended University of Michigan. I studied finance there. And then after that, as all Korean males do, I had to serve in the military. So I had to come back after graduation. So I spent about 3 years and a half serving in the Korean Air Force as an officer. And then I started my career at G Capital as part of its financial leadership program called FMP. And as part of the program, I got dispatched to Singapore. And then, you know, by then GE was actually divesting the majority of its financial arms, you know, and then they were focusing on its manufacturing route. So as the finance team, my job was basically like very routine and operation-based role. So I got kind of bored with that. And then at the same time, there was a big e-commerce boom happening in Southeast Asia, like with the rise of Lazada, you know, Shopee, you know, all these big e-commerce companies that you probably have heard of out of the region. So yeah, I decided to jump ship and decided to join this company called NinjaMan, which is a logistics firm that enables e-commerce basically. So joined at their Series B round, stay there all the way until Series D, experiencing hyper growth stage. And then after that, I joined early stage VC called Big Basin Capital. After that, I also joined another startup called MediHere, which was doing telemedicine targeting the immigrant population out of the US. And then, you know, I joined Cross, which is a Web3 investment arm of Kakao, which is essentially like WhatsApp slash a super app for a 50 million Korean population. And, you know, after that, I, you know, with this experience combined, I thought I'd be able to create something tangible in Web3 as part of the venture building team here at Shard Lab.
Okay, it's amazing. It's a various job experience. So also, I think it's life experience you have. Yeah, it's great. So what do you believe are the key factors that have positioned Southeast Asia, especially in comparison to other global regions you have experienced? Huh.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think what really differentiates Southeast Asia from other markets is I think it's definitely the dynamic user base, right? Like I think twofold. Number one is it's overall, I guess, age and the population is very young. right? It's, I think Southeast Asia collectively accounts for like about 10% of the population, but then its average age is, I think, early 30s versus, you know, when you look at Europe and China, like China is already late in their late 30s, and then also Europe, like almost like 50s, right? So there's a big difference. And then, you know, because of their youth, people in Southeast Asia are more adaptive to new technologies, as witnessed by their, you know, super high mobile phone penetration rate. Like any country you go, you're looking at like at least like 90%+ mobile penetration. Like, so everybody is very much used to handling transactions, you know, performing their day-to-day tasks on their mobile phones. And also, you know, this youth also explains the high penetration rate in crypto, right? Because they do not have like much wealth to begin with. So they like to take risk and then make money off of it. And this created such a huge emergence mm-hmm. of this trend called GameFi during the last bull run, right? In 2020 and 2021. So, you know, people were like hungry to make money in the midst of COVID when they lost their job, you know, all the factories got shut down. And then, you know, that was one of the few ways in which they could, you know, bring bread to the table, right? So yeah, I think that definitely makes the region like a lot more exciting than others, because, you know, majority of the crypto projects involves, you know, the element of tokens, right? That mm-hmm. can be listed and then, you know, can see liquidity event relatively faster than, you know, other startups that do not have tokens. So I think that factor can be very interesting in the region, right? As a, you know, initial incentives to put together a critical mass of users, you know, very quickly, just like how X Infinity did it. But I think the question that remains is how that we're going to make that sustainable. And then I think there have been lots of, you know, different attempts, you know, different, I guess, thought experiments ongoing to actually make that happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you struggling to get the media attention your business deserves? Do you want to boost your brand awareness and establish yourself as an industry leader? We are providing not a press release publishing in the blind link, but an actual article on top-tier media. With our team of experienced PR professionals and journalists, we'll help you craft compelling stories and pitch them to top-tier media outlets. From Forbes to TechCrunch and Bloomberg US, VentureBeat and Yahoo Finance, we'll work tirelessly to get your business the coverage it deserves. Let Peerix.co help you take your business to the next level with our top-tier media coverage service. Visit our website today to learn more and schedule a free consultation.
And last couple of years, you were talking about people are really hungry for money. Also, like after that crazy 2 years, it's regulatory also. Landscape is changing, right? I'm also curious about it because I like to learn more about the adoption of cryptocurrency in Southeast Asia. And can you share, please, like insights into how this adaptation contrasts with the regulatory landscapes in the countries?
I think Southeast Asia, although it's a region, you know, it's, I guess, the constituents, each country is very unique in its own and then has different dynamics, you know. So I think each country has its own policy and regulatory dynamics, for sure. But then the thing about Southeast Asian countries, it's not really like looking to lead in regulating the blockchain / crypto industry, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that it seems to be the case for the US or maybe like some East Asian countries, you know, Japan or Korea, but that doesn't seem to be necessarily the case here in Southeast Asia. But what I do witness is there's a increasing regulatory pressure from Singapore, right? Because mm-hmm. Singapore, the Singaporean National Sovereign Wealth Fund, Temasek, it did invest in FTX, which, you know, failed quite dramatically with SBF Saga and all. Mm-hmm. And yes. That really prompted the government to crack down on the industry in general. Like not so Singapore was very favorable towards crypto in general, but doesn't seem to be the case anymore, not as much as they were. And for the case of Thailand, I think the newly elected prime minister, he's very pro-crypto, but I'm not sure how that is going to pan out, given that it's only been, you know, a few months into his role. And then, you know, one interesting fact is that one of his election campaign promises was that he's going to disperse the universal basic income to the Thai nationals in the form of stable coins, right? But that, I don't know how that's going to materialize, if I could be honest with you.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm reading about, for example, Southeast Asia with nearly 700 million residents as one of the world's fastest growing populations. I didn't know that. Yeah. It's crazy. Like half of this population, they're active internet users and more are coming online. Yeah, it makes sense. Like what did you mention in the beginning of the podcast? It's big. The population, the total population of more than 600 million, about 8.5% of the world's population. This region stands as the third most populous geographical region in Asia after South Asia and East Asia. And also you are going to South Asia Blockchain Week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you please tell me more, like what is your goal? What is the company Shard Labs goal on Blockchain Week at Southeast Asia?
Southeast Asia Blockchain Week is the premier blockchain week that we are hosting in coming April as our the very first inaugural event. And what we are really trying to achieve is to create a forum of discussion on the unique dynamics of the Southeast Asia as a Web3 ecosystem, right? Because, you know, I'll be honest with you, like there are many blockchain conferences in the region already, like including Token 2049 happening in Singapore, you know, CoinFest in Bali, you know, GM Vietnam, Thailand Blockchain Week, like what have you. But why do we need another one even, right? Like that's because that we are missing that one blockchain conference that encapsulates all the like gist of, you know, that what's happening in the Southeast Asia Web3 ecosystem. Like for instance, Token 2049 is like a lot bigger than us, you know, in scale. And also in terms of, you know, like the speaker roster there a lot, you know, I'd say, you know, arguably a lot better than us. Mm-hmm. But then I looked at their sessions last year. There was only one session that was discussing Southeast Asia, right? Like, so while it's physically embedded in the Southeast Asian ecosystem, but it's really not talking that much about it, right? And versus like, I think GM Vietnam or the Thailand Blockchain Week, they tend to be too country specific, right? To cover the different dynamics of different countries in the region. So yeah, that's what we're trying to achieve here, right? So I think while each country has its own merits and then uniqueness in Southeast Asia, but I think as I mentioned earlier, there's one commonality that combines all these different countries together. That is the dynamic user base in Southeast Asia. And I think lots of different Web3 projects are very much interested in, right? Mm-hmm. So while this region may not be leading in terms of, I guess, some of the most advanced, you know, blockchain technology, like, you know, parallel EVM, you know, a modular blockchain, you know, all these technological advancements that's happening at the very forefront of the scene, you know, that's probably like happening in the US or like Western part of the world, maybe some East Asian part of the world. But I think it's all about how to access these user base to unlock the potential of mass adoption of Web3 and blockchain technology.
Yeah, I agree. And my last question, it's about the future of gaming and digital ownership. But first, what does it mean for the future of gaming and digital ownership in the region? And like the last one, Southeast Asia is noted like as the world's gateway to blockchain gaming, driving growth and innovation. Could you please elaborate on how to gaming industry in Southeast Asia integrating with blockchain technology?
Right. Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I think that the Southeast Asia gaming ecosystem, especially embracing Web3, is largely inspired by the success of Axie Infinity back in 2020 and 2021, right? So lots of different projects thought they would also have a shot at, you know, having the level of success that Axie Infinity did by embracing the element of Web3, you know, like, and then doing something that others really didn't do. So the majority of the projects coming out of the region is concentrated in Vietnam, which is the exact country where Xfinity is based in. So, and you know, one interesting fact about the Vietnamese gaming studio is that they have been doing lots of outsourced works on behalf of AAA level gaming studios in the Western world, like in Europe, you know, in the US. Then you can talk about like Activision, Ubisoft, you know, Blizzard, so on and so forth. So they have experience in shipping I don't know what's the best way to put this, but like, I guess the hardware, you know, like the looks and feels, you know, making, building the body, you know, the physical aspect of the game itself. But, you know, they really like the content. So they're like trying to overcome that by, number one, trying to create a game title by themselves. And number two, by embracing Web3 elements, make it a bit more exciting for the local users. So yeah, as witnessed in the rise of Xfinity back then, I think it could have a tremendous potential, right? I mean, in gaming in general, I think it's creating a whole new world, right? Just like how we spend time in the physical world, you know, like exchanging goods, you know, spending time with your family and friends. I think especially the younger generation, right? Like they're more familiar with spending time with their friends and family and then exchanging services and goods in the online world, the virtual world, right? And I think that one manifestation of such a virtual world that it's coming is, I think, through gaming, right? Because that's one way to more like one of the more immersive ways in which you engage with your friends, right? Like through have a common goal, you know, you achieve that together, you know, and then I think the kind of things that and the actions that you could do in these virtual worlds was limited to only, you know, maybe like just gaming itself. But then, you know, with the introduction of NFT as a technology that verifies the digital ownership, and also with this, all the cryptocurrencies that makes it easier for anybody to perform transactions in that digital world, I think the boundary of, you know, this virtual world via gaming is ever expanding. I think thanks to the dynamic nature of the Southeast Asian user base, I think they would be one of the first to get into this and then, you know, really accelerate the adoption and then, you know, make the very first use case of mass adoption of, you know, Web3 and crypto.
Yeah. Thank you for all of your insights, Josh. And I host today Josh Lee, the project lead at Shard Lab. And thanks for tuning in. Stay inspired and keep listening. Until next time, goodbye.